Well, exactly a year in, and the COVID-19 pandemic and subsequent lockdown has taken its toll on everyone. But small businesses have really borne the brunt of the 7% decline in GDP that we saw last week. We all know the situation for SMEs is dire. We know the stats, we've read the surveys. But the big question is, what is being done about it, and what you can do about it as well? Entrepreneurship represents the very best of us. It's our drive, it's our desire to solve problems, it's our purpose, our why. And Simon Sinek would say, it really is what gets us out of bed every morning. Now, clearly, the COVID pandemic is a meteor shower that threatens many SMEs, but those who have made it through to the other side are going to be all the better for it. And there has never been a better time to discover your why and start solving problems. Now, FinFind, in partnership with the Department of Small Business Development, the services CETA, as well as Business Leadership South Africa and the Banking Association and a host of other partners, conducted a study on the impact of lockdown on small businesses to understand why. And it offers insights on ways to better support SMEs through the recovery phase as we're looking to rebuild. We're joined now by Darlene Menzies, Founder and Chief Innovation Officer at FinFind. Tumi Sefolo, Executive Director for Lending at the Small Enterprise Finance Agency, Muzi Mplambi, Senior Manager at the Banking Association of South Africa, and Kantha Naika, Chairman of the South African Institute of Professional Accountants. Darlene, your study covered over 15,000 SMEs. Just break that down for us. What sort of SMEs are we talking about here? Mom and pop, sole props, what do they look like?
So we actually put a survey out to more than 15,000 and had a response from just on 10% of those. So the sample set is a sample of 1,500 businesses across every province, every sector, and also across the revenue brackets, across the from the micro to the very small and the medium-sized businesses. So what was great about it, because I think of the collaboration of the type of partners that we had on board, we got a really good insight into what the you know, the whole sector, and so a lot of generalization could be done off the feedback that we got, because it spoke across all sectors, provinces, etc., and sizes of businesses. Larger piece of the sample of businesses that were turning up to R1 million a year, and then through past 20 million, 30 million, and upwards of 50 million a year. So a sample right across the spectrum.
And when we look into the findings, I mean, we know that it's been terrible for SMEs out there. But Kantha, I want to kick off on one of the stark findings for me was that, well, nearly 70% of businesses do financial record keeping or accounting in-house. It's concerning that only 28% had up-to-date management accounts going into this crisis. I mean, that's just a little over one in four businesses keeping up-to-date management accounts.
Look, Michael and Dalt will agree here, this is not a pandemic-induced statistic. It's been around for a long, long time. Guys start their own businesses. Entrepreneurs want to do everything on their own. They leave the record keeping too late. They forget that there's a professional that can assist them. So they want to try and do the bookkeeping and record keeping on their own. And so what we found during this COVID time is when the relief funding came about and the access to other types of funding came about, people simply couldn't produce the management accounts or any type of financial statements or any type of cohesive way in which to present their business financially. And what concerns us as the South African Institute of Professional Accountants is that not many small businesses want to approach a professional to look at their finances. They prefer doing it on their own. And so when you're sitting in that situation and you're unable to actually measure what you've done or actually produce records that show what you've done as a business, you're unable to find the type of assistance that you need from the banking association or any of the other normal channels you go to. And so the small businesses end up going for looking at funding, and I think the report shows this, to family and friends, because you simply don't have enough to put on the table to be able to convince you know, a government agency. And we've seen that. We've seen, you know, a sort of a failing almost by the relief schemes of not funding, because people simply do not have the records. So we want to, from the South African Institute of Professional Accountants perspective, encourage people to look for professionals, people that are registered with a professional body to actually assist with doing your bookkeeping and financial record keeping.
But it's also understanding how the SME ecosystem works, because another key finding for me, and we'll come back to it, was the fact that small business owners paid their staff and suppliers before they paid themselves. And so, therefore, if you go to a formal lender, you might not look credit worthy through the formal credit vetting processes, but it really doesn't speak to the way the SME ecosystem works. I want to come back, though, Muzi, to a point, and I think it's really interesting to note this, that businesses that had taken on debt from formal lenders did have a higher survival rate. I mean, that's not surprising considering that cash flow dried up and you needed this buffer. What really stood out for you as the Banking Association from this study? And we'll come to the Treasury's loan guarantee scheme a little bit later, but headline, what did you make of the findings?
Yeah, I think that particular finding, that those that had access to formal funding institution or the brand better, I think that stood out for us. But also something that we've always been talking about, that the difficulty in terms of SMEs accessing finance are the non-financial issues, the bookkeeping. If you don't have your finances, it's difficult to have a conversation with the banks. So the information asymmetry issues are key in terms of solving for access to finance.
And how do we solve for some of those information asymmetry issues inside an ecosystem that so desperately needs access to this formal funding? What are some of the solutions?
You're right that it has to be a collaboration between partners, because it's an ecosystem issue. Mm-hmm. In the sector, what we have done, banks have provided the non-financial support themselves, but that is not enough. I think the demand is greater than that. So we need to, all partners need to align to tackle this problem. I think other initiatives that banks have done have offered accounting packages, but you sort of also need hand-holding for SMEs to make these things work. So this study for us in terms of bringing together different parties to look at the problem bodes well for us holding hands together in terms of finding the solutions.
And putting the entrepreneur at the center of those solutions, you know, formal lenders, alternative lenders, you know, government-backed DFI type lenders, and obviously, you know, the professional accounting industry as well, providing some of these services. And there was a very interesting finding around businesses not being ready to pivot to online. And I think that speaks to this issue of perhaps not being able to use some of these software packages. But to me, from your vantage point at CIFA, which could be considered more of a DFI type lender into the space, what really stood out from you from the research?
For us, I guess there were two major things that stood out from the study. The first one was that it's evident that small businesses did not have enough runway when the pandemic hit from a financial perspective. And it talks to something that we firmly believe in as CIFA, when we fund businesses, is to try and help them, support them to build up the working capital, so that when crises like we experienced 12 months ago hit, you do have at least 3 months worth of working capital so that you can continue to operate. Many may argue that COVID-19 was a black swan event, once in a lifetime, never to be repeated. However, our view is that when you run your small business, there will be many black swan events. And therefore, it's always a good idea to build up some kitty so that you can at least see yourself at least for about 3 months. So that was the first issue that stood out from the study. And when we implemented the SMME relief scheme on behalf of the Department of Small Business, we experienced a very high volume of applications. So similar to what Muzi was saying from the Banking Association, that the demand was just exceedingly higher than what we had the capital for. And therefore, we had to make some quick decisions around how we implement the scheme. One is that we knew that small businesses don't have proper financial records. So our compromise was that they needed to submit to us at least banking statements, their bank statements, and that we used as a proxy to try and assess what the business activity was before COVID hit. So if you analyze bank statements worth 6 months, the business may not have management accounts, they may not have annual financial statements, but you can, as a lender, determine what sort of cash flow is taking place in the business and therefore what kind of debt you can extend to them.
I mean, that comes back to that earlier point, Darlene, because small businesses do operate differently. And through a crisis like this, you pay your staff, your key expenses, your suppliers, and then you pay yourself last. And I think the data conclusively shows that lenders are going to have to review their sort of one-size-fits-all methodology in terms of how they assess and vet credit applications.
Absolutely. I think it's a great point that Tumi makes, and just the view that, that CFIT took in terms of looking at those applications. Small businesses need to be vetted very differently to a larger, small or medium-sized business, as maybe a bank would look at them, with the way they look at, for instance, the business owner's personal credit record, or they have a look at does the business owner get a regular monthly salary into their personal account at the same time every month. That's a normal way of looking at somebody who's employed. But when you look at a small business owner, their whole focus is to make sure they're paying the staff who are the actual assets of the business, who're paying their suppliers to make sure that they keep on good terms. And then, of course, as money then filters in, and because they don't have records, they don't know, you know, the movement of money and the timing of money, they can't see the cash cliff coming. And so mostly they're managing on a month-to-month basis. And so it's very important that we start to have a look at what we call alternative data. And often that's not alternative in terms of it being something innovative or completely new. It's more data that is sitting within the business that they don't know how to expose to the lender. So for instance, it may be sitting in the bank statements, as Tumi just said. It may be sitting in mobile phone account data and other type of data, which the credit bureaus don't have that they don't store. So right now in our country, we have a very strong, well-governed and standardized mechanism for collecting consumer credit data on a monthly basis, and the bureaus can give anybody a credit score on an individual. But there's no such mechanism or even a regulation that exists in the business frame. And so it stands to reason why some of the lenders, government and banks and other private lenders, do lean into some of the owner's own the way they've managed their own credit just as a proxy for how they might manage business. But we need to start to, this survey shows clearly that business don't operate that way. Data is very clear on that. And so we need to have a look at alternative lenses and scorecards on how we, because there are viable, really good businesses that actually went out of businesses, lots of jobs lost, just because they couldn't position themselves or show themselves to lenders in a way that they didn't understand how to do that. So I absolutely concur with what you're saying.
Kantha, what stands out for you in terms of policy interventions or other interventions in the ecosystem now that can help better support SMEs as we look to recover from COVID-19?
So one of the biggest things we found from a on-the-ground business perspective with clients is that if a client did business with government and we're not paid on time, so that the pay rule that sits within the PFMA was not adhered to, that particular business sat 60 to 90 days out of sync in terms of not receiving any money at all. And so it's a cyclical problem, because if you don't receive money from government, how do you then keep your tax compliance going, and how do you then continue in business, and keep your guys employed, et cetera, et cetera. So for us, if that's one policy shift that has to be made, like government needs to commit to paying within the 30-day time frame. There's been lots of talk about it before, but not much has been done. The other thing is that from a SARS tax VAT PAYE perspective, from a small business, looking at small business particularly, and small business in this particular report, which shows compliance falls first. So surely SARS should be looking at, or the fiscus or the National Treasury should be looking at, how do we implement some sort of small business amnesty around, and I'm not saying to run away from paying the tax, but some sort of reprieve for these businesses that have stuck within COVID-19, who haven't been actually able to dig themselves out of it. And mostly because they've been doing business with government and not being able to pay government. So there needs to be some look around that from a policy perspective. Mm. But more so, I want to touch on what Darlene said before the break. This reporting that she's talking about, which is what we refer to in the accounting world as integrated reporting, that happens traditionally in most listed companies, PTY companies, et cetera, et cetera. And integrated reporting is actually the key behind understanding how business operates, and it will be key in allowing policymakers to look at how this sector can be assisted. So things beyond just the normal credit lending information that we have at hand. I mean, if a small business has been paying SARS diligently, has been paying its staff diligently, and its creditors diligently, it's been running a success, and themselves diligently, it's been running a successful business. Never mind it's been stealing from Peter, Mary, and Paul to actually do that. How do we now take that information and frame it correctly so that when people look at these businesses, they look at them through credible lenses, you know, giving them the benefit of the doubt of actually having done business correctly?
And I think on that point, Muzi, to come back to the Treasury Loan Guarantee Scheme, I know the banks have taken a lot of flack for the poor uptake here, and BASA has come out with the numbers to say it is because SMEs haven't wanted to incur more debt. But if you look at the actual numbers, over half of the applications were declined by the bank. So that seems to suggest that the appetite to incur debt was there, but these borrowers were just not creditworthy. How much of that is down to looking at the borrowers through this traditional lens? And how is the Banking Association thinking about adapting its framework based on what we now know from the study?
Thanks, Michael. To start with that, I'm probably not the right person to talk on the LGS within the institution. But having said that, I think one of the things that we need to look at is getting the economy on the right footing. Because what we found as an association is that even before we got into COVID, SMEs were struggling because the economy was just not doing that well. And then if you look at the criteria that was set by government for lending to these SMEs around the LGS, you find that it also threw out a lot of the SMEs. One, it penalized you for informality. And as I said, if you were struggling before I think the cutoff date was December, then you couldn't qualify for the loan. So it's not just the resources of the banks that it contributed to throwing out a lot of But having said that, I think the banks are, this is an area also the banks that are looking at. This is an area that's very competitive in terms of the banks. So when we speak to them individually, we find that there's a lot of work behind the scenes that they're doing to get this right.
Well, that's a big question now, isn't it, Tubi? How do we coax these SMEs and these entrepreneurs who closed their doors as a result of COVID-19 back into trying again without blacklisting them? Because here you have entrepreneurs that are so critical to the sustainability and the durability of this recovery. Many of them now who will be blacklisted because of what happened during COVID-19.
Yeah, I think it's a critical point, and it probably requires us collectively as stakeholders in the ecosystem to make sure that we have a similar approach. So the approach that we've adopted, led by the Department of Small Business Development, is that we've tailored a range of economic recovery programs to firstly protect those SMMEs that are still existing and operating through a business viability scheme, where we are saying if you have been supported as in the first phase, if you've been supported by the department as well as the agencies of the department, we want to ensure that you continue operating. So we take a long-term view on your business and say, if additional funding is what you require in order to survive or pivot your business into a new reality, then we must be the ones to support you to make sure that we protect the SMME and also protect the jobs. But we must do it in a manner that provides patient capital, because one thing that we can't do is that already businesses are in debt, and some have taken further debt through the various relief schemes. So we have to be reasonable in terms of the kind of capital, patient capital that we provide, because if we just continue to give them loans at high interest rates, it's not going to work in the long term.
Yeah.
The second is that there's a number of schemes, such as the Small Enterprise Manufacturing Program, where we've said COVID has presented an opportunity where it showed us in a very short space of time, particularly when we went on the hard lockdown between March and June, where the world had just closed down completely, and all of a sudden we had to reconsider the normal day-to-day products that we consume as South Africans, where we are purchasing those products for. And we're saying to SMEs, this is an opportunity for us to produce more products locally instead of importing products, because it just doesn't make sense when you have a crisis like the one we had. So through the manufacturing program, we've been providing funding to local manufacturers so that they can supply local consumers and support them also with market access. So we've been engaging with retailers and wholesalers to say, here are South African companies producing goods for the South African economy. Enlist them as your providers so that they can scale up their businesses. But also we have a range of informal programs that we've launched that really cater to really informal micro businesses and targeting those individuals who through this pandemic would have lost their jobs and now are looking for an opportunity to start a micro enterprise to earn a source of income for their households. So there's a whole range of those programs that we've launched and are implementing and are still available. And we are going to continue to roll out those programs over the next 3 years, because we do believe that it is going to take a while for the South African economy to recover. And we need to ensure that as an agency of the Department of Small Business, we make capital available to those that want to be in starting their own businesses.
Thanks, Tumi. Just with 30 seconds to go, Darlene, what would you like to see happen now from this research, armed with the knowledge now that we need to broaden the net in terms of the alternative data sources to better understand SMEs? What needs to happen from here?
Right, Michael, I think what the data did for us was really just confirm what many of us in the sector already knew, but data is really powerful in terms of shifting policy and being able to make good decisions. I think both Tumi and Muzi have alluded to better collaboration together in the ecosystem, fixing some of these finance readiness issues. Some of the if you have a look at the National Credit Act and how it doesn't speak to business, it's more of a consumer type act. We're working with the World Bank and the National Credit Regulator around how do we look at our alternative data and what needs to change from a regulation point of view to make sure that we can lift the water level for everyone. So I think collaboration is the big issue, focusing in on finance readiness. But then for me, the main issue is how do we take the data that actually exists that is not being exposed to the lender, the alternative data, and not only for the banks, but some of the more alternative funders, the online funders, bringing them through. There's about 280 private lenders in the ecosystem besides the DFIs and of course all of the banks.
So that know how to reach those markets. Yeah, absolutely. Darlene, we're going to have to end it there. We've run out of time. Thank you very much. Really interesting insights. Data rich. Darlene Menzies, founder and chief innovation officer at FinFind. Tumi Sefolo, executive director for lending at the Small Enterprise Finance Agency. Muzi Mplambi, senior manager at the Banking Association of South Africa. And Kantha Naika, chairman of the South African Institute of Professional Accountants, with the impact of COVID-19 on SMEs a year into the pandemic.